Okay. Good morning. My name is Michael Bromwich, in case anybody doesn't know. I'm the person who sends not as many emails as Bob, but quite a lot, and for you to review and things. I have great pleasure in introducing Trevor Hopper. I'm told by Bob and Wim that there's no need to go through a long CV because all the speakers here today are so famous you know anybody. Therefore, I won't. Trevor.
Or infamous.
Good luck.
Right, I chose as my title, like the others, I was asked to look at management accounting research, its contributions to social and critical work. Whether the paper refers to management accounting research, the journal, or generally, is up to you. But apologies to the North Americans, but it's deliberate British ambiguity, which we delight in the title, and you can interpret it how you bloody well want. Right. Is it critical? For those of you who are sat on your seats in suspense, waiting for the answer is no. And there's a lot of you in this room probably thinking, thank God for that. When I was in the queue for tea and coffee just now, I can remember being in a similar queue at a European conference. There's a German professor in front of me, and he got talking, what do you do? And I said, well, I do social and critical work. I tried to be polite. I said, we use a lot of German social theorists, Habermas. I said, yeah. I spent all my academic career making sure people like you don't get into my university. And it's still around. It's still around. Now, one of my problems in this invitation goes back to the problem, it's a bit like Joan had, perhaps to a lesser extent, with experimental work, there's very little critical work. So I'd had a very easy task and just comment on three papers. or I took the other stance and I thought I'd do everything. So apologies if it's rather wide-ranging, and obviously in a short presentation I can't do full justice to everything that's in the paper. How did I go about the paper? Rather self-indulgently, it starts with my early experiences in behavioural research, which is quite interesting, actually, because I say in the paper, I had this idea at the 50th anniversary of what was probably the first intake of business studies undergraduates in the UK. I was in the first batch. And we had a particularly intriguing professor, Tony Lowe, who actually, very, very, very unusually, then actually taught some behavioural accounting, mainly Stedery and Kay on budgeting. So I thought, well, I'm not involved in the foundation of MAR, but I thought it's just interesting to take a longer look back and to look at the context of how MAR was founded. And it also gave me some tools then at the very end to evaluate what progress has been made according to which particular constituencies that were involved in the founding of MAR. The next thing I did, actually, and I was talking to David Offaly yesterday, and I said, oh, God, if we'd have realised, I don't know if we'd have done this, but of course it meant reading every MAR paper. And I think I had a... Yeah, you probably not do that, Mike. Bob says he has. Right, I believe you. And then I had this kind of document about 150 pages long, and I started to slice and dice it according to my own sort of perceptions of themes, and I thought, no, this isn't really... I don't feel that happy with this. It's well, everything's subjective, but this is very subjective. And I'm an empiricist at heart, so I thought, no, we need to get some more formal analysis in this. So Vin came on board and did a Nivivo analysis of all the Marr papers in the first 25 years according to various classifications. And I'm glad I did that, actually, and I'll come back to coding later, because it did alter some of the things I would have said without doing this. And then the paper finishes with a consideration of whose aspirations have been met. After a short time in industry as a cost accountant, I ended up by chance as a lecturer in a technical college, in a business. Actually, I was officially a lecturer in business studies. What was fascinating then is there's virtually no knowledge of management, certainly in the UK. Mike yesterday referred to linear programme and how it's disappeared. In actual fact, the students then complained that every lecturer taught linear programming. Could they have something else? I mentioned in the text that I remember there was a seminar called Business Problems that was taught by an ex-manager from the colonies. And one of his classes, a practical class, hands-on, was how to construct a sandbag defence should the natives rebel. And then I did a SEMA correspondence course. Now, it's Rapid Results College, it was. If you didn't pass, you got your money back. And one thing that always sticks in that was there's quite a lot of advice on colour schemes. And one of the things was, what colour should you paint toilets? And they said, vivid red to stop lingering. I see LSE has got quite, hasn't taken that advice. You might hand it on. So that was a kind of state of managerial knowledge. And the manager that I had to teach was nearly always used Breck, which I won't go into that, but it was a classical management principles book, which I just found absolutely confusing. Couldn't make head or tail of it. So so that was one issue. There was also then weak accounting research, or there was a perception of weak accounting research, particularly in the 1980s. And actually, the forerunner of the conference yesterday was actually very, very important in the UK, because it brought young and old management accounting researchers in the UK together, and we even stayed overnight and had a long time to talk about what were perceived as the problems of management accounting at the time, getting better research. And it was very inclusive. They even invited me. And one of the things from my memory that came out was a general... Well, we've got all these new modern techniques, marginal costing, the DCF, linear programming, but people in industry don't seem to be using them, therefore we need to do about and do understand what managers are doing from their perspective, which meant doing more case studies. So it's a kind of pragmatic, let's get back to understand managers more. But that was quite important. Also... as a young, struggling tech teacher, I became aware of behavioural accounting and got really interested in it. And mainly, and interestingly, nearly all from the USA. Not all, there's people like Hofstadter, and I suppose Anthony, in a sense, is semi-USA in terms of his PhD. I got really excited by this and read it avidly. And throughout the UK, there are other kind of dissidents and people interested in this. And networks developed. It wasn't easy if you did behavioural accounting research. I know I went for jobs. You know, a lot of departments say, well, this isn't accounting. Well, another department said that was a disgrace to accounting. But that's another matter. But there were sort of heretics around. And kind of heretical departments. Sheffield was particularly important. They employed everybody who was unemployable by every other department because of their views. Absolutely, it was a fascinating place there. There was also the Management Control Workshop Group. It's now the Management Control Association, still going through Julie and Kim, which came out of MBS at a very important time, just after MBS's creation, and early members, influenced very much by systems theory, Stafford Beer. It was an interdisciplinary group. But when I joined, there were people like David Cooper, David Ottley here, Tony Pugsty, Richard Loughlin. I can go on, but there was a kind of David Cooper, interesting group of what were then heretical scholars that it was kind of self-defence, you know, and it was about the only people, there's no one else you could talk to, really. One thing that's often forgotten, actually, though, about that early Sheffield work and the Management Control Workshop is it was very, very strongly influenced by cybernetics and general systems theory. Very much so. It was interdisciplinary. The critical stuff kind of got added on a bit later when we got into systems theory, then we hit philosophical problems with systems theory, people like West Churchman and Mitroff that got into dialectical inquiring systems, and that then got us into the philosophy of social sciences, and for some of us with more leftist inclinations, it got us more interested in some of the radical or more critical organisation theory work. Another thing actually is it was very UK centric. Obviously I'm speaking as a UK person. I remember my first European exposure. I went with Tony Pugsty, Y. Fonture, and Tony Lowe to the very first workshop at the EAA. And it was hard. First, we didn't have much money to go, so we had to go by the cheapest train and boat possible. We arrived at Brussels about 2 o'clock in the morning in a cheap pension, and it was our first kind of exposure to European researchers. And wow! They've got similar ideas to us. But it was then, from a UK point of view, largely UK Anglo-American centric. Critical research, where did this come from? Well, by the way, I don't particularly like the word critical, because it kind of, I don't like words that try to privilege things, as if work that's not in this vein isn't critical and can't be critical, but we're stuck with the label. One interesting thing is David Cooper and I formed the IPA conferences, which we said, look, there's a lot of people doing quite political, more radical work in accounting, but they're scattered and isolated internationally. So we started the IPA conference. What's interesting, and it's critical of this paper, is we really had a political agenda. Well, I did. David speak for himself. But he did. the aim really was to give voice to poor and disadvantaged people and public interest and public interest reform. But we're also academic entrepreneurs. And we realised that to some extent, we were clearer what we were against rather than for. And we were against American positive theory and neoclassical economics. Not entirely. It can produce interesting and important results, but to the virtual exclusion of any other paradigm. So being academic entrepreneurs, we defined sort of the IPA conference as being fairly inclusive. So if people say doing work in institutional theory, or if they're doing grounded theory, social and environmental, which was then a bit corporatist or whatever, they were in. If they were doing quantitative contingency theory, it tended to be out. Experimental was out. We got a lot of American experimental. I mean, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's just that. So really there was a division there between, and it goes back to the mission in this paper, between social, which is to some extent institutional, grounded, and so on, and the more critical, which is more political economy and so on. So that's roughly how I've divided those two. It's interesting, though, that these methodological debates were going on in Europe in the 1980s, but were ignored and suppressed in North America. In 1986, or 7, I can't remember exactly which, I had a year in the States at the University of Michigan, the very generous and hospitable hosts. And one of the reasons I went there was Rensis Likert had been there, and it was the Institute for Social Research, and that's where human asset accounting and lots of other interesting things, which, you know, I'd been reading, got there. They'd never heard of it. What's more, what they did hear of it, they didn't like. And they didn't, I mean, they even asked me to stop questions in seminars about people's assumptions. So it was confusing them. I mean, it was quite clear that it wasn't flavour of the day, and important editors were in that department then. There were networks in the USA, but over time they're dying out and being killed. Right. First then, just the vivo analysis. I'll go through this fairly quickly. There's a lot more detail in the paper. Where have the authors come from? Well, initially it was UK dominated. What's interesting now is that it's increasingly continental European authors that dominate contributions. There's then quite a few phrases. What type of organisation studied? Oh, we had to do this just for case study and qualitative research because it was difficult in survey research to classify. Mainly large ones. Which regions? Mainly Europe and, lesser extent, Australasia and North America. Right, critical comment. Hardly any on developing countries. There's lots of papers on where capital resides, but there's very few papers on where people reside. The majority of people live in developing countries and there are major accounting issues in development programmes going on. Totally ignored. A total neglect of accounting and development. The professions are going global. They're moving into developing countries. Is this a good thing? Is it killing indigenous accounting professions? Is it just a form of Western hegemony in imposing Western solutions into developing countries? And nearly all the research shows they nearly always fail. Is it just about creating markets for Western financial services and Western financial consultants to purvey their latest systems in a quick 2-week visit that then get jettisoned or are maintained to give the order of rationality, but in actual fact are never really used or used in the way that you anticipated? Nothing on this. Nothing on NGOs. If you go to a developing country, you will see NGOs lining the road. NGOs are major organisations, particularly in developing countries. Some of them, such as BRAC and AXA in Bangladesh, are massive, almost multinational companies. Nothing. Nothing on charities, nothing on voluntary community groups. A passion of mine, cultural organisations. I do voluntary work, give financial advice to artistic cultural organisations. Hardly any. I think there might be one or two papers. One of the pleasant things for me was actually the predominance of public sector research in MAR. I was quite surprised at this, actually. I came into it thinking, oh, I'll slate them for not neglecting the public sector. But actually, there's more public sector than private sector papers just in MAR. What theories were adopted? The interesting thing is, and we combined in our Navivo analysis social and critical, so it's really social actually. Predominant, actually. Quite surprisingly. Management control systems, contingency economic theories, and ex-post custom. What are the most common research methods? Qualitative case studies. I was quite surprised again here, even the contingency theory papers in Mar, the majority were case study based, although significant volume surveys and analytical work, but little mathematical or experimental. Some of the comments from the sort of fallout of the analysis. Not surprising, we found America's more oriented to economic and psychological theories and methods, whereas qualitative surveys were more predominant in Europe. Social and critical papers came particularly from the UK, or the UK and Ireland, to be technically correct, but continental Europe, a large number. And these were the predominant theories throughout Europe. One thing that did surprise us, actually, and again I'm glad I did the Nivivo analysis, I expected to find differences within continental Europe of different theories and different research methods being adopted. But actually we didn't find that. For example, I expected the Netherlands and the German papers to have more economics, more mathematical papers, but it didn't come out in the survey, so make what you want of that. Oh, a little hobby of horse mine. I'm mainly a qualitative researcher, but I do like qualitative methods. And as a referee, I'm constantly amazed by qualitative papers that don't describe their methods, and particularly their data analysis. So we did a little exercise of the qualitative papers, how many had none, some, or full coding, and quite a high proportion had no or just very slight coding. Now, I know it's fashionable in some circles to decry coding and that. I'm just not in that camp. Sorry, folks, but I'm not. I still, to be convinced, want to see how the methods have been done and whether they've followed good qualitative canons of analysis. The other thing here is, yeah, there's a lot of qualitative research. I used to go to a lot of sociology conferences when I was a younger researcher, and they were very fraught of affairs. A lot of qualitative research. The phenomenalists hated the ethno-methodologists who hated the symbolic interactionists. Yet, accounting papers just lump them all together as qualitative researchers. There's often not very good appreciation of the underlying theory, and there's problems of comparability due to different measurement systems. Right. Triangulation has frequently occurred in Mar. I won't talk about this, but it's an interesting topic worthy of further investigation and that. I commend it, but I think how to do it and so on, it needs a lot more. But if you're going to do this, people who believe in scientific method and facticity and objectivity really have got to brush up on the philosophy of social sciences and recognise the elements of subjectivity, agency and equifinality if you're going to have a conversation. Right, Mar papers. Now, this was my breakdown of the Mar papers. I put them into those categories. It roughly comes out with the category of the Nivivo analysis, but this is my own personal ones. No, that was the Nivivo analysis of the topics. I'll rush through that. My own analysis came out here of the ones I wanted to examine in a bit more detail. Obviously, it's got to be fairly brief. What's interesting is some of the newer ones that have been emerging in Mar, particularly the inter-org risk management, which surprised me. The first evaluation themes, relevance loss and the new costing. These were my categories. I'm trying to rush too quickly. Relevance loss, new costing. The relevance loss, new costing. One thing that fascinated me, particularly in the early years of the journal, is that nearly every paper refers to relevance. It seemed if it was mandatory, or you get, I'm not blaming the editors, but it was all relevance lost. And so we got all these so-called new techniques, ABC, BSC, you can read it there, coming largely from consultants or quasi-academic consultants. Now, I think Marr did a really good job on these, actually, if you read the papers. It shows the value of multidisciplinary critique. Were they always new? Not necessarily. Did they always work as professed? No. Sometimes they did, but sometimes were abject failures. There were technical problems on implementation, often implementation problems, and so on. So actually, if you read this stuff, there's quite a nice critique and analysis of these techniques. I'm not saying they're all bad, but carefully qualified and quite different from the rhetoric of many of their propounders. Now, what then interested me was, I think, some papers by Bjorn on the diffusion of managerial knowledge. And then, why is it that all these suddenly appeared in syllabuses and textbooks before any academic research had been done? On what basis is management accounting knowledge based? And by the way, last night, just shows what a boring person I am, before I went to bed from yesterday's session, I read the paper on global management accounting principles, which has been propounded by professional institutes. There's not one academic reference in that paper, or not one bit of evidence of it being based on any evidence-based academic work whatsoever. I think there are serious issues here about how management accounting knowledge is created. And also, if you're a profession, on what basis do your knowledge claims rest? Is it any more than folk wisdom? The other thing then that I got into, I suppose, is contingency theory, the search for fits. At the end of the day, I started my research career in the Aston Industrial Administration Unit, which was then probably the centre for contingency research internationally, famous. It's interesting, as I got there, they were all abandoning contingency theory. They were all saying, no, what about managerial choice and things like that? Again, the pluses mean substantial contributions, and David will go into this in a lot more detail. It incorporates behavioural, organisational, and environmental factors into analysis, which have been included, control packages. It's an interesting thing. And some patterns do emerge, not very consistent, but it's not without value. And it's certainly with value for the one-size-fits-all reputation. So it's been useful. I actually think those are more social critical theories, that it could only go so far. Humans have agency. Managers make choices. There's often equifinality in organisations. You don't have to do things necessarily the same way to get the same results. For example, when I was in Japan and doing research there, I was interested. Yeah, Japanese methods were prevalent and quite different then in the 80s to the UK. But they were what they call presidential-style organisations, with not particularly group-oriented, with a guy at the top, and you did what they said. You get variations. But it kind of worries me, like a lot of work, it gives a kind of veneer of neutrality to researchers. Oh, the organisation is just consisted of external environmental uncertainty, it's a question of sizes, managers, it's just a technical problem of fitting the control to the particular situational factors. We're really scientists. But there's big power issues going around there. And one thing that interested me is total neglect of labour issues. I picked up a paper in Mar by Peter Armstrong, the Industrial Relations Survey, and one of the things which I don't think I've ever seen anybody ever quote, it's a paper worth reading. All Peter's stuff's worth reading. And one of the things that came out of the survey is accounting controls were used most on the shop floor when there was part-time, ununionised and... I forget the other factors, but weaker labour. If that's so, that raises a whole issue, set of issues, about what is accounting doing to labour. There are gender issues going there. There are low pay issues going there. There are stress issues. Yeah. I couldn't find hardly any papers on performance measurements that looked at job satisfaction, alienation or stress of workers. There were a few, but virtually none. And then I was thinking back to my early days as a young researcher, you know, Mayo, Hertzberg, Licker and all that. At least they were kind of saying, a happy worker is a good worker. Now we know that that's not always true. But at least they were trying to create better working conditions for people. Socio-technical systems, they were trying to make better systems for miners working under difficult conditions. Now most of the research is, how can we screw these guys? Reconstituting the public sector, a big thing. Mark's done a lot of good work here, actually. 5 minutes, right, I'm going to rush. A lot of good work here. So I'll just come back to criticisms of the work. Hardly anything on the politics of public sector change, or comparative analysis. I was interested in comparing the results of Scandinavian papers with those from New Zealand and the UK, which have been subject more to Thatcherite right-wing reforms. Quite different in terms of implementation and priorities there, but little studied. Only one paper in Mar has ever mentioned democracy. That was Brunson sometime in the early 1990s. Complete and total ignoral of civil society participation in political and public sector or even private sector decisions. We've got corporate accounting, we've got state accounting, but we've no citizen accounting. Change, Bob, your area. Again, I'll just say, it's achieved a lot. And I put NIS and OIE together. Actually, they're not that different, some of the works. One of the things that I did find very surprising in our papers, particularly the NIS ones, were that very few actually went beyond extra-organisational, which is quite surprising given the emphasis of NIS on that. Again, non-normative, little critical societal analysis. Have a dig at Bob. I mean, a lot of the OIE stuff, you know. Veblen was not an easy man to get on with and had strong political views. No wonder he had jobs. Difficulty holding down a job. But sleeping with the president's wife isn't a good thing. Neglect of differential power, neglect of state and politics. Come to post-structural Foucauldian. Important work here shows that power knowledge, our control systems rooted in power knowledge, it renders the subject and visible, power and discourse connected. The papers in Marwan, which was mine, said it, Foucault needed supplemented by other theory. I must admit, though, it leaves me a little bit cold in some ways. It's very nihilistic. I know that Foucauldians will deny this. Very top down. Oh, we're all, you know, a victim. I know I'm a victim of power knowledge systems. You've only got to mention REF. I want to know, how do I get out of it? How do we get rid of it? But it doesn't seem to help much there. ANC here, very important work here. It's important change linear purposes, accounting systems, socially creating networks, which is technology. One thing that's interesting is that our accounting systems are socially negotiating stable. One thing I think is very, very important in this ATN work is Practice is, or may well be, very different from conventional descriptions. Practice, or the technology of accounting, is created in these networks. If that's the case, where does that put our tones of management accounting knowledge and what we teach students? And it was interesting talking to a lot of practitioners yesterday. I mean, I didn't mention it in these terms, but they were more or less saying the same things. Yeah, you know, we have to turn to it. A lot of interesting stuff. Is Jan here? No, he's not. Jan, particularly, a lot of interesting stuff on control systems in innovative knowledge-based organisations and systems that are creative, which may be dialectical and contradictory, and which, again, aren't used and aren't designed as the conventional stuff we teach our students. But little political economy or discourse theory work. So that's about it. To be fair to them, they've not been averse to publishing it. There's about three papers in there. I don't blame the editors, I blame you guys. They can only publish what's submitted. Social environmental. Apart from one paper, this has been totally neglected by MAR until you had a special edition, I think, in the last year, so you just escaped. Total criticism here about ignoring the future of our planet. And the research that came out tended to support other social accounting research of this ilk, that much of the work done by businesses is greenwashing and sustainability will only be a concern if it aids profits. And there's been no addressal of the more fundamental debates, which are political within ecology and the social environmental accounting knowledge. So, going from the past, yeah, there's been an explosion of behavioural research, new theories, new topics. Speaking as a young researcher, that's been fantastic. There's a great new field and findings being opened up. Mark's been there. There have been major social contributions in the areas of implementation, change control, systems design, subjective case study. I could go on. And there's better understanding of practice through case study research. One thing I've not talked about is, going back to my early American experiences, is one of the interesting things is there's the geography of management accounting seems to have changed. As a young researcher, aspiring researcher, it was a rite of passage almost to go to the States for a year where you thought that was all happening. Now the network is all within Europe, and there's fantastic networks developed within Europe through particularly people like Anthony Hopwood and his colleagues creating the EAA and all the spin-offs through that. I'm not getting at the North Americans, I just feel sorry for you. I think you're victims of a quite tyrannical regime, particularly from financial accounting, that seems intent on killing management accounting, except in a very, very narrow way. But it's been quite surprising that. Returning to historiography. Oh, hang on, am I going backwards? Yeah, a little critical work, though. I'll go through this last slide. Almost a total neglect of politics. Loads of paper mentions globalisation. Not one paper defines it or examines it. And by the way, that's not just... I'm doing a paper on globalisation, development and accounting. Couldn't find any in AOS. I mean, that's as corporatist as a lot of other journals. Little on ecology. Labour is made almost invisible. Little, virtually nothing on gender, de-skilling, unions, industrial relations, or just making people more fulfilled at work. A total neglect of civil society involvement, rights and democracy. And these are important issues in public administration research at this moment. Not being picked up. Complete, almost total neglect of civil society organisations. NGOs, charities, organisations. These are major parts of economies. There might not be some of the rich Western economies. Well, certainly in a place like London, the cultural organisations are massive. And so most of the research I looked at in Mars essentially top-down, corporatist, devoid of political context and any attempts to make what to me is meaningful reform. Otherwise, it's pretty good. I'll just give you 2 seconds. Returning to my personal historiography, yes, major research, which the Management Control Workshop, now Association, and many others wanted to do, that's been achieved. Going back to the early management accounting research conferences, a better understanding of practice, and I think an important area there is that we had senior sympathetic professors in the UK that let 1,000 flowers bloom. I mean, really, Mike's the godfather of critical research. he never shut it out. He probably didn't realise it, but the growth of European networks has been very successful, and there have been major advances in some of the social topics that I've mentioned, and more qualitative research of the IPA conference. But there's been a total neglect of critical work in the sense of trying to give voice, influence, and more power to the marginal and disadvantaged. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. You have to say, if nothing else, Trevor is zealous. Only Bob, I think, claims to have read every paper in Mar. I'm a bit surprised you didn't read all the corresponding papers in other journals.
Well, I'll make a comment on that, actually. I can only make it in respect to one job I'm doing. I seem to be a birthday boy. CPA have asked me to do a paper on globalisation, developing countries and accounting. So I've been reading other journals in that context. AOS comes out terribly badly.
Good.
It's a kind of mid-Atlantic, very corporatist journal. When you actually read it from that perspective, with virtually nothing on more on NGOs, but very little on developing countries. Much more on in CPA, AAAJ, a bit scattergun in AAAJ, but there's more there. Actually, I found quite a few interesting articles in Accounting Forum, which isn't a journal I should read it more. So it's not something to mar. And of course, the North American journals I didn't even bother looking at.
Okay. Thank you, Trevor.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm pretty right.
I can't resist asking, this is probably a mistake, I can't resist asking Trevor how many marks he would give Mar out of 10.
Well, it depends on your criteria, that's what I'm saying. That's why I had to have a benchmark of the early history, right. And I'd say it would get near out of 10 out of 10, except for critical.
Right. Questions, comments, you say who you are and where you're from. Jake.
I'm Jake Bernberg from the University of Pittsburgh still. At the risk of giving Trevor yet another paper, and he seems to be much too busy to need one, have you considered Darwinian, very appropriate here, explanation as to why behavioral research, as we see it in the States, colonies, is very different from what you see on both sides of what you call the English Channel and they call the European ditch?
I'll try and give three quick responses. One is, a lot of the British research emerged later in the 80s when there was a big philosophical and methodological debate going on in management schools, whereas in the USA, a lot of the doctoral programs were strongly influenced by the Ford Foundation and the scientism then. If it had been the other way around, it might have come out different. Why more psychological behaviour? I'm nothing against psychological behavioural work. It's perfectly valid.
Didn't think you were.
But it could be, and this is a horrible, huge generalisation, but American work tends to be more individualised and...
well, part of it represents...
But the other thing...
We're talking about here, the control system.
Yeah. But
the other thing is... the States.
The third thing is, you had excellent social and critical researchers in the States in the 80s. I mentioned some of them in the paper. Mark Kowaleski. Can he have PhD students?
Jake
Bernberg, yourself. Ed Arrington, who's now had to work in Australia. Jerry Francis, who's had to change his style to keep him work. I could go on. There were good people there. You were actually where it was happening. But it got killed primarily by this damn positive theory ignorance. I mean, I mentioned in the paper, I think Jensen was a disaster to call her. I mean, the paper is called, what is it, Organisation Theory and the Philosophy of Social Science, and there's not one reference to Organisation Theory or the Philosophy of Social Science, and it became the predominant Bible. So,
does Jake want to have the last word?
Right.
I don't get it is the last word. Darwin.
Oh, Darwin?
No.
No, this is why I'm sympathetic with you. I'm not blaming you.
Yeah.
It's an intellectual desert, isn't it?
That was the last word. Somebody else, please. Is there nobody else who dares? Ah, good.
I'm so anybody.
Thank you very much, Trevor, for this beautiful diagnosis. And my question is a little bit provocative comment. Have you thought about the potential performative effect of your presentation? If I am hearing you, I'm just thinking if I'm doing gender research or research on ecology or research on developing countries, I am certainly not going to submit my paper tomorrow.
To be fair, tomorrow they can only publish what's submitted. I mean, I don't know, but we have a wonderful PhD student in New Zealand who's just completing, and she's been looking at control systems in a very small microfinance organisation in Bangladesh, with a particular issue on democracy and gender. But the research methods are really interesting. You can't do it as you would do it. Does it answer the question?
Well, my question is, as you said, when we do critical research, sometimes we fell short with, so what do we do after having diagnosed such things? So what would be your action so that MAR welcomes more paper about developing countries, about gender, etc., etc.? What would be your agenda for change?
That's to the editors tomorrow, but it's basically up to you guys here to submit those papers tomorrow. They'll be treated fairly by now. I've no problem with that. It's a criticism of the sort of research that's done. You're corporate dupes. Most of you.
Thank you. Paolo Quattrone, University of Edinburgh. Thank you, Trevor, for, in a sense, reminding us what we are here for. My question relates to what Claire has just asked. What would you do, not just to increase the rate of articles submitted to MAR, but what would you do in general to revamp the critical accounting research, especially given that nowadays universities are more corporate than the corporate world?
Well, universities are a disaster. I mean, they're just business organisations. Going back to my rapid results correspondence college, it's probably a university now. What do you do? Yeah, I mean, this is a personal thing, but there's an element of... We always have this involving practice. But for me, I've another PhD. No, I'm not supervising, but I'm involved in New Zealand, who, for example, is studying campaigning groups such as Tax and Cut, and their use of new technology in order to create protest and create a form of accountability over corporations. It's interesting of how corporations respond. They're quite savvy. A lot of what type of organisations? I mean, personally, I mean, you've got to be politically involved, and you've got to. There are organisations out there which I think are legitimate and important in the democratic public process, which are simply go and study. But there's got to be a degree of personal commitment, otherwise we're just talking to ourselves in this room. And there's a lot of far too much so-called critical research, which never really goes beyond the journal. You've got to get involved. That's my. Perhaps I'm old, I still believe in politics. Does that answer the question? We could talk more. Yeah.
All that I want to say is that everybody knows I've retired, but I'm still continuing with papers that I've dealt with.
Yeah.
And in the past 2 months, I've accepted, and they're now forthcoming in MAR, one paper on development in Pakistan.
I think I know what that would be, yeah.
And one paper on theatres in France. So two of your issues. We do publish those papers,
yeah.
and it's entirely, as you say,
yeah.
It's the amount that we get in those areas.
Yeah.
But the journal is sympathetic to that sort of work, and Vimbe wants to ask.
Well, I think you will see more work also coming in the NGO sphere as well.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of NGO stuff in other journals. For some reason, it hasn't come through to management.
But I think the difficulty, Trevor, is also in what sense you mentioned, like, public administration. To what extent are we adapting those theories into our area, or are we followers or leaders? Or, you know, once you gave an interesting example, like, for us, you're a sociologist, but if you go to a sociology conference, there's like 10 different types of them.
Yeah.
And in our management discipline, we are making a distinction between a marketing researcher, and even within accounting, we have financial and so once you start straddling disciplines, it's the identification issue, I think, becomes difficult.
Well, I've always been interdisciplinary. I always encourage my PhD students to go and take courses outside accounting, often outside management. I just review, I think boundaries are artificial creations, usually created to privilege and police certain sectors.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah. Well, and that takes
I mean, if you knew stuff in developing countries, go and read development studies.
Yeah. And that takes some of the issues back beyond, I think, the journal. It has to do with doctoral programs and the parameters that are institutionalized there.
I mean, I think generally my experience, European programs, they obviously vary from institution, are more open and eclectic, and you can get that broad form of training. I think it's a major problem in North America, because I think not only is this research not being done, but if you wanted to, the expertise has virtually gone. There's no capability there, and that's because the PhD programs are so incredibly narrow.
Yeah, I think the other thing people should bear in mind is really, Mark, for example, only does around about 20 papers a year. That's all, over the whole range. You know, in that sense, it's not easy to get in to Mark. And, you know, we can't be an outlet for every possible area. And we have to look for other other journals and so on. There's been a lot of suggestion now, though, that accountants have tended not to write enough in other journals, journals of other disciplines. And that may be something we ought to think much more about.
Can I just say one last word?
That's why I owned.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting me here. But I think one of the reasons why I think European management accounting research has been so successful is because it's been eclectic and been willing to have a range of different viewpoints, which sadly isn't universally the case. And I think those that prohibited it were the losers.
Right. Thank you again, Trevor. It's now lunchtime, 12:45 to 2. We do start right on time, being accountants. As you start 2 minutes early, being accountants. The lunch is in the old building, which if you come out, there's a map in the front of your package. The two ladies in orange, the stewards will guide you that way. You turn right, first left, our main building, fourth floor. I look forward to seeing you this afternoon. Thank you.